In 1902, Teddy Roosevelt and Ideal gave the world the teddy bear. 1933, Ideal introduced the Shirley Temple doll, and the licensing industry was born. For Toy Fair 1963, it was something called Mousetrap, and a totally new concept in games had been started. Now for 1972, Ideal presents the first open-end action game ever created.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. This is episode 29. And on this week's show, we're going to be talking about some of our childhood favorite toys. But before we get into that, let me go around and see who's here. My name is Sean, and with me as usual is Rob Flack-O'Hara. What's going on, Rob?
Hey, man, what's up? I'm glad to be talking to adults for a little bit. I have been in a car for the last 8 days with two kids on a monumental road trip, so it's nice to talk to adults for a change. And we're talking about kids' stuff. We're going to talk about toys, but at least we're talking to adults, so I'm looking forward to that.
A monumental road trip. So it was just like a couple hours or?
No. A couple hours is what I do before breakfast, baby. We drove from Oklahoma City to, the Florida Keys was where we stayed, but we actually drove all the way down to, the southernmost buoy. I guess that's as far south as you can go in the continental United States. But, so we left here last week. It was a kid's spring break. So that's why we went on a road trip. We went to, New Orleans. We, saw stuff there. We drove over, there's days where we went through like three or four states, you know, and then we, got to Florida. We stayed a day at Disney World. We didn't go inside the park, but we stayed at the hotel and went swimming and went to, what's it called? Downtown Disney. Went to go, so we didn't go to the park. We just went to all the parts that were expensive, like outside the park, you know, nice $65 dinner for hamburgers and hot dogs. And then made it all the way down to the Florida Keys and saw stuff there. We went to go. We did a thing where we got to swim with dolphins, which was cool. And we went to go snorkeling and I mean, just all kinds of cool stuff. But my wife, she doesn't like to stay in one place for too long on vacation. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, we're in New Orleans. She's like, all right, we've been here 2 hours, time to move. I'm like, I think there might be more to see here. There might be some more stuff to do. But
well, didn't you go to a like a float museum or something?
Yeah, it's called Mardi Gras World. And what it is I didn't really know that much about Mardi Gras beforehand. I thought Mardi Gras was just like one parade, but it turns out it's like dozens of parades. And each parade is put on by a separate crew, and each crew has to have at least 10 floats. And there's a different theme for every parade. And each float has to be a different theme each year. So there's like, you know, hundreds of these floats that are being redecorated. So what this company does is, they make like the big giant figures and stuff that go on floats, and they decorate the floats. They also outsource stuff. They do a lot of the, like fiberglass figures that are at Disney. So they do that stuff. If you're familiar with Chick-fil-A, I don't know if, do you guys have Chick-fil-A up there?
I don't have them here, but yeah, I've been to them.
Yeah. They do the cows that they have these billboards, and they have cows. Mm-hmm. But they do those. So, yeah, we got to walk around this thing, and that was probably one of the coolest things, I thought, you know.
It looked really cool. I sat, I don't know if you posted them Sunday morning, maybe. Mm-hmm. My son and I were, you had like 20 or 30 pictures on there from there. We were kind of scrolling through them, and he was happy when he saw Yoda and Vader. Oh, and stuff like
yeah.
That.
You know, one of the things they do is that they recycle stuff every year. So they were showing us, they had this little house that was, I guess one year it was Shrek's house, and then they repainted it. The next year it was like a Hobbit house, you know, so they, mm-hmm. they keep all these props and they just kind of reuse them each year and paint them and do, quick stuff, you know, because they actually have two different kinds of things. One is, fiberglass stuff, which is like the kind of permanent stuff you see at theme parks and things. But the other stuff that are for the floats, they make them out of whatever. Like they'll build them out of wood and then they put paper mache on them and they paint them. And because they only have to last for a day, You know, I mean, they just go through one time and then they pull back, but they keep all that stuff forever and they just recycle it. So yeah, that was really cool. And then, like I said, going down and we got to do a thing where we were in the water with dolphins, you know, and I was actually, I didn't want to do it at first because my wife told me about it. And I'm like, you know, I think these are the places that like beat dolphins. You know what I mean? Like I don't want to be part of that. And, but anyway, when we went, it was actually like a dolphin rescue, and it was a place that takes dolphins, like when zoos can't, keep them anymore, or there was one there that had been, in a shark attack, like in the wild, and someone had found it or whatever. So, they like rehabilitate them, and they have, dorms where people that study dolphin behavior come from around the country and they stay there and do that. So, yeah, that was pretty cool. And we got to like go in the water and they did some different tricks and stuff. There was one thing I have to tell you this. They did different things like what you would expect a dolphin, like a trick. You know what I mean? Like
right,
they do their hand signal. They put their hand on top of their head like a fin, and then they swim back and forth and they're like, oh, look, they're being sharks. You know, I mean, just silly kind of stuff like that, you know? And, anyway, so they got my daughter right up front. And, you know, you're the ones that are giving the signals to these dolphins. So, and when you're looking at them, they look so smart. They look like they're just looking at you, you know? And, so this dolphin's looking at it and you're supposed to say, get me a present. And so the dolphin just nods its head and takes off. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? And then the lady, you know, the trainer, she's like, oh, well, the dolphin, he'll go out and he'll find you a present. And so like 30 seconds later, he comes up right in front of my daughter and he's got this rock in his mouth that he just got from the bottom of the lagoon, and they're like, go ahead and take it, you know, and she took it. And so she got this rock, and then they got the other one, the one that had been, you know, the shark attack. And then they got my son to do it, and he says, go get a present. And he leaves. And then the lady's like, listen, I'm just going to warn you, this dolphin's not a good shopper. Like, he has brought back fish. He's brought back like mud, you know, just so you never know what you're going to get with this guy. And he brought back this big weed that had been growing from the lagoon or whatever, and we were like, all right, well, that's a souvenir, I guess. But yeah, and you know, I have never thought twice about eating any kind of meat. I mean, I am a carnivore through and through, you know what I mean? I mean, mm-hmm. I will have steak, I will have whatever. It does, you know, that stuff doesn't bother me at all. I can look at a chicken and go have scrambled eggs, and it does, you know, it just, that doesn't bother me at all. We went that night to a Mexican/Cuban restaurant down in the Keys, and they had dolphin on the menu, like dolphin burgers and stuff. And
this is,
I was,
this
like,
is after you had gone?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I was like, that's terrible. I was like, I can't do that. I mean, once you've been around them, I mean, they just seem like they're super smart, you know, and that they really do kind of make eye contact with you and do all these things. I was like, yeah, I don't think I could eat dolphin. That one might be off the list.
I thought that was only in Japan that you would find that dolphin on the menu.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you there.
No. Jump in, man. I don't know what I know. I saw dolphin burger. I don't know. Maybe dolphin fajitas. I don't know.
That's wrong.
Yeah, it really did.
Get it here as well.
But yeah. So it was a good trip. Everybody had a good time. And after 3,638.5 miles, man, which is what the odometer said when we rolled into the driveway, everybody had a good time. And now everybody is having a good time being apart from one another. Right,
yeah,
now.
I would imagine. My God,
that's great. Well, I'm glad you had a good time. Glad you're back. Yeah. It's good to get recording again. And that voice you heard, let me introduce our other host today. He is a retro gamer, and I think like you, Rob, he's a arcade game enthusiast as well. And
correct.
He's also part of the Throwback Network. He is one of the hosts of the Intellivisionaries podcast, Mr. Paul Nerman. And what's up, Paul?
Hey, guys. Great to be with you. Just yeah, no problem. I just wanted to say about that, what you're talking about, Rob, is that like an early spring trip? Are you planning like then the summer road trip and then the late fall road trip, or is it,
you know what, as funny as it sounds, we kind of are.
Oh, man.
This is the spring break trip. The kids are on spring break, but this summer when the kids are out, we're actually going to fly out your way. We're going to fly out to California. We're going to do the California is one of five states I haven't been to yet, believe it or
wow.
not.
What are you going to do out here? What's the plan out here?
I know we're going to do Hollywood. We're going to do that whole thing. We're going to do Disneyland. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the one that's out there. And I think we've got a full day for that. And then my wife has always wanted to drive up north and go to the Redwoods and do all that. So we're going to rent a car and drive up to see the Redwoods and do all that. So but it'll be it's not going to be 3,600 miles. That's my driving trip for the year. I'm done with that for right now. But
well, that's quite a trek, though, from Southern California to go up to Central and then Northern California. I mean, you're looking man, 6 to 8 hour drive to get up that way.
Don't tell me that. Just tell me they're really close together.
If you leave early in the morning, you'll be fine.
Great.
About three, maybe two. No, it's good. I mean, yeah, when you come out this way, if you have any time, you got to stop by. I'm really close to LA Airport, so
nice.
Hop off your plane and get in a little arcade gaming, and then head on.
Yeah, I want to hear how you have games at your house, right?
I do indeed. Yeah, I've got we've got a 2-car garage that we never use for cars, so I decided, hey, look at all this wasted space. Let me cut it in half, put up a wall, and have an arcade, sweetie. What do you think? Yeah, that's what she said. Nothing. So, yeah, you know, I lucked into these games. I go to a few gaming expos when I can, and Classic Gaming Expo in 2012, I was there. I'm friends with the Retro Gaming Roundup guys and a few other guys involved in the show. But this guy who does video game music, he's a composer named Tommy Tallarico. He also does a Video Games Live, which is a concert series. They tour the world and they play video game music with synchronized video from games, and it's all orchestral. It's really, really impressive. So I met him there, and we get to talking about Intellivision and stuff we played as kids. And next thing you know, he invites me down to this this party he has every year for people involved in game music. And I go down there, and he had three broken Intellivisions. Long story short, I fixed his Intellivisions, and he had an arcade, several arcade games in his garage that didn't work and he didn't want anymore, and no one would take off his hands. So I said, sure, I'll take them, and he offered three of them to me. He offered me Elevator Action, Satan's Hollow, and one that's called Fort Cosmos, which is basically a Japanese knockoff of Star Castle.
Okay.
So that was the plan. Told the wife, hey, I'm going to get these three arcade games and I'm going to fix them up. And again, that same, you know, non-response kind of rolling the eyes look. So I rent a truck. I took a couple guys that work for me down there, and we get there and we're loading the games. And he says, you know, you're the only one that's ever brought a truck down here, so why don't you just take all seven of these?
Oh, wow.
No problem.
Yeah, so that's I mean, an instant collection all of a sudden.
Yeah. I mean, prior to that, I'd messed around with MAME, and I have a lot of friends who have these, and I, you know, help people out, but I had MAME, but not in a cabinet. So yeah, anyway, I get the games home. Only actually, I believe two of them worked. The others were dead for various reasons, as you know, Rob, with these things. But the best part was when my wife came home and she looked in the garage and she saw seven arcade cabinets stacked up next to each other. That look was priceless. I really wish I'd taken a picture of that.
Was that air quotes about the best?
Yes. Yeah, you can't see the air quotes, but oh, yeah. But she probably assumed I would just sit on them, whatever. But I slowly got, you know, one working at a time. And for a while, they're sitting in the, sitting in the middle of the garage. And I was like, this is not an arcade. You know, I can see my kid's stroller. There's the laundry basket and the dryer. So over the course of about a year, I converted half the garage, put up a wall, and I used that really ugly wood grain paneling that everything was in the 70s.
Right.
So, and then I painted the other walls and the ceiling, put the black lights, the black light carpeting, these really hideously ugly burgundy brothel curtains to cover the open end. And there you go. Instant arcade.
Nice.
It looks great too, though. I mean, and you have... you were interviewed with that, and there was a video. I watched that when you posted it. I'll have to put that in the show notes.
Yeah, that was William Culver. He goes by a lot of names. He's got a YouTube series called Arcade USA, and he travels a lot for his own day job. So he gets around to all these different arcades in different parts of the country. And yeah, he stopped by and did a little interview. He did something about the Intellivisionaries too.
Yeah, I saw that as well. And he is one of the hosts on the ColecoVision.
ColecoVisions,
podcast,
right? Yep, with SoCal Mike from Retro Gaming Roundup. It's just one big happy family of podcasters.
Exactly. Yeah,
right.
Well, why don't you talk a little bit about the Intellivision series as well?
I'm in the process of putting episode 7 together. We decided to review all 3 baseball games in one episode, which is, in retrospect, not the best idea if you enjoy free time.
So this should be what, like a 10, 15 minute long episode? Is that right?
Maybe 12 minutes, I think. We'll be able to nail it down into that and keep it less than quarter of an hour. We're gonna break the 5 hour mark, I believe. Going to wow. set a record here. And you know, this was not the intention. I'm not trying to compete with Retro Gaming Roundup. I mean, they're hitting 7 hours regularly. Wow. But you know what? I don't know how else to do it because, I've made good contacts with a lot of people involved, especially Keith Robinson in Television Productions. I don't know if you guys know him, but, mm-hmm. you know, he was one of the original programmers. Not original, but one of the programmers back then. I'm able to get these former guys that did the games and interviews with them. And there's other people that are involved in homebrew scene. And so, you know, you figure you do an hour or so interview with someone plus our game review. And we're going to go in depth on all these games. There's no way to condense it really.
Right. And you shouldn't. And I'll tell you why. There's so many, not just podcasts. There are podcasts, but websites and things like that where they say, hey, I'm going to review whatever this game. And then when you read it, there are podcasts and you listen to it and it's like, they're just reading what's on Wikipedia
mm-hmm.
or they're, you know, and it's like, if you've researched the game at all, you know, it's like, I know all this.
Right.
You know? And so that's what I love about your show is, you know, when you're talking to the guys, the programmers, or, you know, when you talk about a game for an hour, you're going to get in-depth stuff that you don't get from just going through Wikipedia or just typing a name into Google, you know, or any of that kind of stuff. So, I mean, they are long shows, but I mean, they're, I don't want to say exhaustive because I don't want to imply exhausting, but you know what no. I mean? Like they are all encompassing.
Well, that's one of the reasons I wanted to do this. Because the Intellivision was my favorite system as a kid. I started with the 2600 and my neighbor had the Intellivision and I wanted that after I saw it. So as a kid, I mean, I've told this story on the show. I sold my 2600 to buy the Intellivision and there's a lot of stuff on YouTube, a lot of young guys reviewing games, and it's very on the surface, and there's a lot of facts that they get wrong, and, oh, I think this was for this and that, and it kind of bugged me, right? And I've been involved in other podcasts and doing production things and music things and little segments here and there, but I hadn't done my own. But I said, you know what, I'm tired of this. You know, the Intellivision needs a mouthpiece out there, and I went looking for like-minded folks and found Will or Burger Time as he goes by and Rick, and we just started planning it out. And early on I had a meeting with Keith Robinson to see if he had any wanted to be involved, had input, cared about me using his logo, whatever. I told him I'd say something in the show that, you know, he owns the rights, kind of thing. So it was several months actually planning and putting it together before we decided to finally get that first episode out last September, and it's been a blast. I mean, I love doing it. It does take a lot of time, as you guys both know. Podcasting is it's a great way to spend your time, but it does take a lot of time. So
but especially when you're doing a good product, you know, it's not like, I mean, what's the point if you're just going to go to Google and or, you know, Wikipedia and then just do a show where you read that? Well, anybody could go read that themselves. So, you know, right. To put out something like what you guys do, I mean, you get a lot of information, and it's not just, you know, like you said with the interviews, it's not just what you find on the internet. You're actually talking to these guys.
Yeah, and you get the story firsthand, and plus all of us grew up with it, so we all have our own personal stories with the games too. I mean, I like other systems too. Sure, I had just about every retro gaming system you can think of, but I can't speak with authority on like Genesis games or the NES necessarily because I didn't have it as long and it wasn't as important to me as a kid as the Intellivision was.
Now, when you were a kid and you said you wanted the Intellivision, had you already seen the controller? Or
The controller controversy, yes. It's an acquired taste, but I think when you start using it as a kid, because you're so blown away by these graphics, because they weren't around on any other system at home at the time, you kind of just force yourself to get used to it. Now, I'll admit it does cause your hand to be sore after certain games, especially, but I never had a problem with the disc, and I also don't have a problem with the Atari joystick either. That works for me too. The joysticks I did have a problem with were the really big ones, like the flight yoke kind of grip sticks, because there's so much leverage you create. And if you're trying to hold that in your hand, it just breaks your wrist.
Anything that had to have suction cups on the bottom, I was pretty much out.
Yeah.
You know,
same thing here. But, well, as it turns out, as a kid, since we're talking about toys this evening, when I was a very young kid, my parents had a friend of the family who worked for Mattel, and we were enrolled, my sister and I have a sister who's a couple years older than me. We were enrolled in the test toy program at Mattel. So we would, like, I believe, it's hard to remember, I was pretty young, but I think it was around every month we would get a new toy. And
nice.
That would be like a Vertibird. Or, you know what the Vertibirds are, right? The helicopter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or some other variation of some flying thing, or some, you know, truck that did different things. It's hard to remember. I have some memories of a few toys here and there, and we would play with them. And I don't remember really understanding the concept. I just remember my mom sitting there while I'm playing, asking me questions. And I'm like, why are you talking to me, Mom? I want to play with my Vertibird.
Oh, so
leave me alone.
Like a focus group kind of thing or whatever.
Exactly. Okay. And then they would turn that into Mattel, and, you know, Mattel would make decisions based on how many kids, you know, said this toy sucks or this is the best toy ever.
Wow.
I do remember having something that was like a Vertibird. It was a biplane. I remember it was blue with yellow wings. I don't know if there was some sort of a character tie-in or not, but that thing would not get off the ground. It would just go in circles, very, very rapidly go in circles, but it would not leave the ground. And I remember taking the wings off and putting, like, attaching other little, like, little Lego guys to the thing, and they would be sort of dragged around on this. And I would set up cars to crash through it. And of course, the propeller broke eventually from that, but I don't remember Mattel ever releasing that product, so I didn't think I probably gave it a very good review.
Yeah. Boy, can you imagine if you had all that stuff now, prototype toys and stuff?
I have
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, I have a couple of little pieces of toys from that here and there. like right now, I have a little, on my recording rig here, I've got a little thing from one of the Vertibirds. It's like a little street sign that says emergency, like something they put up to block the road. That the helicopter would have picked up. Yeah. That's all I have of my Vertibird collection. I must have had 3 or 4 different versions, and some of them I don't even think were ever released.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But to tie that into the Intellivision, so that same family friend, when I decided I wanted to buy one, sold the 2600, and then my family friend got me the Intellivision for about $210, and at the time they were going for close to $300, so pretty good discount.
Oh, yeah.
But, went crazy with it after that.
You said they were with Mattel. Did they ever have any, like, games that you got to try out or anything?
The test toy stuff that I did was probably early to mid 70s.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So that was pre Mattel Electronics. Yeah. But I got the handheld games in the late 70s when they started coming out. Still have those ones too in my collection.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a
Sean,
fun
we're
time.
Not going to talk about anything you planned. We're just going to talk about this all night.
That's right. Mattel test toy episode. That was a blast.
We did something like that here. We had we have Fisher Price, and my son did a couple toy tests.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
There are no toy companies here in Oklahoma, I don't think. I could probably get in a fishing pole testing something.
I think
that's probably all I could get.
I think your room would be considered a toy plant of some sort.
Right. Yeah, but those toys aren't for children to touch. Yeah.
Right. I have kids in here, and I'm like, if I were to let you to open something, which one? You just point at it. Don't touch it, but just point at one.
Well, that's
when I say.
Yeah, that's a funny thing. That. Like, at my parents' house, I have a little storage shed, and a lot of my toys are still over there. And I'm talking about my Matchbox cars, Lego, Star Wars toys, other video game things, you name it, slot car tracks. And my wife is like, well, you have those old cars. Why don't you just bring them over and let Luke play with them? I'm like, no. those would be destroyed in 10 minutes. Yeah. But what do
Everything
you care?
Everything that I had left, my kids have,
no,
they got their hands on, and some of it's still wrong. But.
Well, I've given him some things, but there are certain things that I said, okay, in time, sweetie, yeah. I will bring those out and he can learn to play with them carefully.
When he's ready.
Yes.
Well, Rob, why don't you start us off with one of your picks?
Sure. So I guess the theme for tonight, we were just talking about different toys that we had as kids or whatever. And so I was trying to think of the not so obvious things. I mean, everybody knows I had Star Wars stuff as a kid. So one of the first ones that I came up with was the Big Track.
It's Big Track, the computer-activated tracker and the automatic transporter. Your child sends Big Track off on a mission by programming in up to 16 commands. Like fire 3 laser blasts. Big Track stores your child's commands. To get out of a tricky spot. To complete the mission, Big Track rolls in, drops the payload, then heads for home base in another assignment. Big Track for your child from NB Electronics, transporter sold separately.
Now, I don't know if you guys... did you guys have a Big Track, or do you know what they are?
I did not.
I know what they are, and just really quickly, I'll say that I had like a variation of it, and I'll elaborate on that later.
Okay. The Big Track was basically everybody else that I knew, all these kids in my neighborhood had remote control cars. RC cars were big when I was a kid. And so what the Big Track was it was like a remote control car, but instead of having a remote control where you would drive it around or whatever, it was programmable. I've talked about, you know, on my podcast and on here, I had I had a computer really early. We had a TRS-80 Model 3. And we got that when I was like 6. So really early on, I learned, the logic behind basic programming, you know, like, you know, line 10, do this, line 20, do this, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of logic. And so that really translated into this. So there was, a little like keypad on the back of this thing, and it looked like an outer space tank is basically what it looked like. It had, 6 wheels and, so you had this little keypad on it, and you would program in, like, you know, what direction you wanted it to go, and then for how long, like, you know, go forward and then turn right or turn left or whatever. And so you'd program in this little, you know, series of movements or whatever, and then hit go, and it would take off and, you know, just do it. So, you really had to plan out your course. Like, we had a coffee table that, you know, you could like go underneath, you know what I mean? It just had like 2 legs on the coffee table. And so you try to figure out like how far to make this thing to go and then turn left and then, you know, turn around and go under it and do different things like that. So, I know I didn't have this, but there was a trailer that you could hook up to it as well. And you could program it to like dump stuff out. So you could program this thing to go around the house and then, I don't know. I just drive around and dump stuff out. Maybe you put cat food in it and drive around. And
or an apple and drop it off to your father.
Yeah, I like the cat food idea. Have the cat chase it around, right? Just dump little bits here and there.
But and I had this, and it's funny you mentioned a knockoff or whatever, because I also, I don't know, maybe it was a year later, I had like a gray Jeep. And it was the exact same thing. It was, you know, you programmed it for, you know, go forward for 4 clips and turn left and do right. And so I don't know. I looked online. I couldn't find who made it. I don't know if it was from the same company or if it was, you know how it was when one toy would come out, then the next year, you know, there'd be 10, you know, similar to it.
Yeah.
Well, so was yours a Jeep also, or was it something else?
No, I believe the company that made the Big Track was LJN, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then years later, they went into making bad NES games. But, the thing that I had came out a little bit after, and it was called the 255 Computer Command. And it's a black Corvette, you know, like that 80s style Corvette. And you lift up the hood, the front mounted hinge on the hood, you lift it up, and there's your control panel. And it's pretty similar to the Big Track control panel. It would do, you know, go forward, turn left, stop, honk your horn, do a siren, back up, that kind of stuff. And I believe it had the same kind of range and capability as a big track. I mean, it couldn't go off-roading because that big track had the six big wheels on it and you could go on dirt and stuff. And there was no trailer option for the Corvette, but
well, and you mentioned like the honk and the horn and stuff. There were some other things that the big track. There was like these little like laser kind of lights on the front. I think that you could make light up and you could do some different stuff like that. So for me, I always thought of it as more of a thinking man's remote control car. You know what I mean? It was because if you look at them side by side, you go, this is a remote control car and this is a big track or whatever. You know, they look very similar. I mean, they're a car with a motor and stuff, but driving them and setting them up is completely different, where a remote control car is like driving a car around. But this was, it was, you know, light programming to, you know, as a kid, where you had to figure out the logic and do this little series of things and make it go around. So I remember I really enjoyed it. And of course, I don't remember exactly when I got mine, but I'm pretty sure I had Star Wars people by then. So that's what the big trek was for me, was it was the programmable troop. Yeah. Tank.
Nice. So let me ask you then, it had a numeric pad on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like was that, so that was, used for seconds that it would go in a certain direction?
No, I want to say it was just for like a length, you know? Yeah. But,
well, I just happen to have my 255 computer command right here.
Oh, do you really?
I do. I don't have batteries in it right now. Yeah, this is one of the toys. I managed to hold on to a lot of my toys. There was a commercial for this thing, and I can't find it on YouTube. I don't think anyone's posted it. The tagline was 255 computer command, put the power of driving in the palm of your hand. And I didn't save the box, but the thing is in really nice shape. It's still shiny. It's got the stickers. It's got like those silver kind of stickers with the orange and yellow. It's totally retro 80s looking. But on the keypad, reading from left to right, it's a 4x4 grid, and it's clear. Then it's left, straight, right, then stop, then back up left, back up straight, back up right. And then there's go, light, siren, horn, 1, 4, 8, and repeat. Now, if I remember correctly, you would choose the direction and the number of repeats for that direction. So,
yeah,
theoretically, you could have this thing going for like 45 minutes on one program if you did the maximum length. Now, mine does work, but I believe it's not turning left or right. One direction it's not turning, and I've got to take it apart and see if I can fix it, but... Yep. Yeah,
you could still get it to run in a NASCAR league.
Well, there you go. But yeah, my son walks in and looks at that all the time because it's sitting up on top of one of my speakers in my little recording rig here. He's like, can I play with that car, Daddy? Nope. Sorry. Yeah. That one is off limits.
That one sounds cool, though, with the control pad underneath the hood, too.
Yeah. I mean, I put like a little link there for you guys if you want to check it out. There's videos of it on YouTube and stuff, but never found the commercial yet.
Well, that's awesome. But yeah, so that's basically what I have for the big trek. Like I said, I remember programming it. I remember putting Star Wars people on the back. Like they kind of had to sit on the keypad, because on the big trek, the keypad was like, if you think like where a pickup bed would be, mm-hmm. you know, it's like on the back part back there, you know. But that was the big trek.
The thing I remembered about these toys, big trek too, because I had a friend who had the big trek, but it's like if you're running this outside in the yard or the driveway or something, you're fine. But the creativity came from trying to make it negotiate your house, right? It's like, okay,
yes.
That's going to be four straight, one left, four more straight, and I can make that turn. And you make it through the door.
And then you set it off and it goes, and then it runs into the door and it's just sitting there on the wheels. And you're like, nope, that was a 5. It wasn't a 4.
That's
and
right.
You have to do it all over again. Yeah.
Yep.
One of the things I do sometimes on these toy shows is I like to look them up on eBay, and it looks like a loose working big track you could get for about, actually, there's, wow. Well, this one says parts. So that might not be a good judge, but there's a couple here with the big track and the box for about 50.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah. And then there's some that are I don't trust untested.
Was it something that was, did they remake this?
I think they did actually come out with one.
It's been on. I don't know who does it, but yeah, there was like a re-release a few years ago of it actually.
Yeah. So you always got to, you know, if you're looking for vintage, you know, type in vintage or whatever. But, you know what? There's some loose ones here for like $20. So that's not bad. So, as Sean knows, as I am wont to do on this show, I usually end up buying something on eBay during the show.
Rob will be spending some money tonight after the show.
You have a toy collection, Rob?
I have a toy room. I'm about to have a toy room collection. I'm about to expand into the next room, but, God, this one looks really good for $69. Buy it now.
Nice.
All right. Ask me at the end of the show if I bought this.
That's a good pick. And, you know, I never got to play with one when I was a kid, but same thing, man. Like G.I. Joe's or something, I totally would have.
Oh, yeah.
So into this thing, man.
And you could mow down army men like there's no tomorrow in that thing.
Oh, yeah. It didn't care. You just, you know, forward 20 and then boom.
All right.
Big Trek has no soul.
Big Trek eats dolphin hamburgers.
So, Paul, why don't you give us one of your childhood picks?
Well, I was going to start with this one that I had as a really little kid, but I think I'm going to hold off and go with the SSP Smash Up Derby from Kenner.
He's a demolition demon in a beat up Chevrolet. It ain't worth a dollar, so he wrecks it every day. Now here is Kenner's SSP Smash Up Derby set. And you can hoot and holler, cause you ain't seen nothing yet. Crash, bang, crack 'em up, put 'em back again. Crash, bang, smash 'em up, it's smash up time, my friend. Kenner's SSP Smash Up Derby set comes with everything you see right here.
All right.
Now, were you guys familiar? See, I'm a couple years older than you guys. Were you guys familiar with the SSP, the little cars? They had like a metal wheel in the center with like a really heavy rubber, solid rubber kind of tire. And you put this little ripcord in it and you pull it and it made this really high pitched whining sound. And you drop the thing and it would just take off.
Take off. Pretty sure I had a hand-me-down one from a cousin or something.
Yeah, a couple of my friends had several of these, and the smash-up derby variety, it was just picture like a couple of old clunker cars from like the late 60s looking. One was a station wagon and one was a sedan, but they looked pretty similar. And they had these little pieces, the doors, the hood, the trunk, the tires, trying to think if there was anything else that came off, but the doors and the hood and the trunk, there were these little levers inside. So when the bumper would get hit, it would push these little tiny levers, which would cause the doors to come off. And it came with two little ramps. And the idea was that you and your buddy would get about, you know, 12, 15, 20 feet apart, pull these rip cords and go. And if you timed it right, named it right, they'd crash into each other in air over the ramps. You know, sometimes you'd miss, you'd go off the ramp, whatever. But these things, they just smashed into each other and everything spun around and the pieces flew everywhere and it was fantastic. And the tires fell off and then it was like reassemble it and come on, let's do it again. Let's do it again. And I don't know what they made that plastic out of, but those things were tough. I mean, you could run them into a wall and we did. We know many, many times, and they would not break. Occasionally, like something would finally chip or maybe the bumper would crack a little bit. But my friend next door neighbor had a set of these, and I remember that they were, one was purple and one was orange, and I did not have them yet, and it was like probably, it had to be around 76 or 77, because when I finally convinced my mom that I absolutely could not live without the Smash Up Derby set, I went to a mall and I picked it up. And the reason I say the year that it was is because I got the version that was like the Stars and Stripes, you know, bicentennial 1776.
Oh,
and okay. So it was the exact same models of cars, except no more purple and orange, now are red, white, and blue. But, the only thing I remember other than the paint scheme is that they didn't seem to be as tough. So I think maybe, Kenner scaled back the thickness of the plastic a little bit because they lasted a long time. They were still able to take the abuse, but not as long as my buddies did. But we would play with these things for hours. I mean, it just didn't get old until, you know, my dad would come around and stop that damn whining with those stupid cars.
Right. You know,
yeah. Then you stop for a while. But I can't even remember how many hours we spent smashing those things into stuff.
Or until your father like steps on a piece when he comes walking through the room.
But it wouldn't break. You could stand on these cars and they wouldn't break. And I don't think that any of these, anyone makes anything like this anymore. Cause the SSP line, I mean, they didn't just have the Smash Up Derby. They had like dragsters and all these kind of funky looking cars in the way that Hot Wheels were funky looking, you know, not realistic.
Kind of exaggerated. Yeah.
Yeah. And the first ones prior to the SSP ones, I think were late '60s even when they started. But, I still have one of those in my little storage with toys, not the Smash Up Derby one, but I have a different one, but it still makes that sound. And that sound gets stuck in your head as a kid. I mean, once you play those things.
Well, I do remember these. I had a cousin who was probably 3 or 4 years older than me, so he was probably close to Paul's age, and he was into everything cars, you know. So he had slot car. He was like I remember having slot car tracks, but he was the kid that would like upgrade his cars somehow. You know what I mean? Like he would get different tires and you know like do these little modifications and stuff. So. You know, he had all different kinds of car toys and stuff. And I remember going over to his house one time and he had this big toy box and he had thrown these down in the toy box. And so I just remember us digging around, like trying to find all the pieces to these cars, mm-hmm. you know, so we could put them together and then smash them into each other. So I didn't have these personally, but, I know that my cousin did. And, yeah, you're right about the sound too. I mean, you know, you spend an afternoon doing that and it's just instant, you know.
Yeah, put a clip of that in the show, Sean.
Yeah.
Not to make you work harder. But yeah, eventually you lose a door, you lose a tire, or whatever. They'll still work fine without all the removable pieces, but then that takes some of the fun out of it.
Right. You lose enough parts and it starts to look like my first car.
Yeah.
See, I'm surprised I didn't have it. This would have been tons of fun. The way I treated my toys, just being able to like purposely had to break them, smash mm-hmm. them up. That would be great.
The commercial's great too. You can find it that pretty easily on YouTube.
Yeah, I did watch it. And when I first saw you, you know, send these to me, it honestly didn't seem familiar, but the more I watch them, I'm pretty sure I played with one of these sets. I didn't have it, but, at some friend's house at one point, because it sounded really, really familiar. Like you described when you'd hit one end, how it would pop certain parts off and everything. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, it looks like you can find the purple car. Here's the purple car. And I don't know if this is the right orange car. They're not too bad. They're like 12, 13 bucks on eBay, but there are some on here. I guess this is like a Roadrunner is what this is supposed to be. It's got the big fin in the back, you know, it's like $200.
You can't find the Stars and Stripes one. I haven't even looked on eBay for these actually.
Oh, it must be. And then of course there's some newer ones on here, but yeah, the vintage ones, this might be, I agree with Sean. I think this is more, I mean, I don't know if you know Sean's legacy with toys.
But he destroys them. You could
fit a Star Wars guy in here. Right, exactly. They'll fit right in here with no arms or legs. You could just stick their torso in here, whatever you got left, one leg or something.
You know, it's funny. I mean, I took pretty good care of my toys, but certain ones I was abusive with. And of course, these were designed to be abused. Mm-hmm. I can't honestly remember what happened to them when their final day was. They may very well have been burned like model airplanes were eventually, but I have a distinct memory of going to that mall to buy these things with my mom and just like standing in that line, holding that box and just having like that kid excitement, like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to have these, you know?
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Might have to get it.
And you got to have it in your hand. Like I remember I had to, I finally got this set of like demons and knights, these blue knights and these red and black demons. And, my mom's like, yeah, they have it at JCPenney's. So I was like, all right, well, let's go. She's like, oh no, you got to order it. It won't be here for like 10 days. Mm-hmm. I'm like counting the days. I'm like, but no, 10 business days. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
What's a business day?
It was horrible. It was such torture, man. It was the worst.
Oh man. Yeah.
Okay, here's the original two cards. You can get both of the original two cars.
I was right about the color, wasn't I?
Yeah.
Purple and orange.
$20. Buy it now.
There
so
you
that's
go.
Not bad.
Boxed complete?
No. These are just loose. But there is a loose set, but I can't tell if it's vintage or if it's a newer one. I mean, it's got the ramps and stuff, but there's no box with it. But I think you could just make your own ramps. You know what
oh,
I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know that anybody was still doing it. It seems like all the pieces would be made of like foam rubber now, right? And they'd be attached with like a safety line so
probably
the door wouldn't fly off too far.
Yeah, it comes with a pair of goggles you gotta put on so nothing hits you in the eye.
And a helmet too. Don't forget the helmet, kids.
Right. And it's funny, these old ones, I mean, they almost look like torpedoes. You know, I mean, yeah. It's like this round thing with little side wheels. And then when you get a little bit newer, there's like there's one that looks like a space doom buggy and there's a Volkswagen and lots of drag strip ones. But I think the old ones have some vintage appeal. I mean, they have a little bit more character, I think.
Right. And looking at them, you can see that the body of the cars were already like pre-dented everywhere. So,
you know, right. Yeah. And plus these ones that are on eBay are all scratched up already. So, you know, that some kid somewhere has already bashed these together a few times.
Oh yeah.
Rob, I want you to send me an invoice tomorrow.
Everything I buy on this one, this one's going to be bad. I got PayPal, my password up right now already. So,
and if you want to get me some of my first choice, I will,
I'm going to mail them to you a piece at a time. I'll be like, oh, here's that little package that's addressed to Left Wheel.
Well, keeping with the vehicle theme, my first choice is Stompers.
Stomper fun by fours with raw power to tackle just about anything you throw their way. And come four-wheel driving back for more and more. Battery not included. Change tires and tackle the tough outdoors. Headlights blazing the way. Wheels turning and churning, pulling you up to the action. Stomper fun by fours, first in four-wheel fun. Each sold separately from Chopper.
You guys remember the old Stompers?
Mm-hmm.
Just very vaguely. I think I was kind of getting out of that kind of toy by 1980.
Yeah, I love these things. They would come with like, you'd get them and they'd have like a rubber knobby wheel, but they would also come with like a little, you could take those off and it would give you like these like little spongy foamy wheels that were knobby just like that. I guess for different tractions and stuff like that. I didn't know they had so many different issues of these things. I mean, I have a checklist, with all the different variations over time that they put these things out, which I'll put in the show notes, because it was kind of cool going through all the different ones, all the different sets, you know, kind of themed sets that they would put out. Mm-hmm. But we had, my brother and I, gosh, we must have had at least 8 or 10 of these things, different ones. We would get, you know, we'd get maybe one car here or truck, or we'd get sometimes, I think we got a set that might have had like 2 or 3 in them. But these were definitely one of my favorites. I mean, they were just little tiny things. I think you put like a AA battery in them. They had little lights that would come on in the front, which I thought was really, really cool.
And they didn't steer. They didn't, you just turn them on and they drove.
Yep. You just set them and they would just kind of go their own path, and you would set up obstacles and stuff like that. You see them, YouTube has a bunch of old commercials for them, and that's all we would do, man. We would just set up, we get the Lincoln Logs out and set up obstacles that way. You'd take them outside and go in the, you know, the mom's garden or whatever, and places you weren't supposed to. We had a stone driveway, like little crushed pebble stone. Oh, it was just so much fun for these things. So mom always had to have batteries on hand, because we would just, I know I personally just love these things. My brother liked them, but he was a few years older than me too. So I kind of would, you know, get his stuff. Like that, he'd be like, oh yeah, it's cool, I'll play with you for a day. And then I started getting them, but I know they gave them away, and they had some Happy Meal ones. I did some research on that. I don't remember getting any, but I found that cool, because Happy Meal toys now suck, I think.
Oh yeah.
You know, my kids, and for the longest time, it was like that they just would get tons of this junk stuff, and we just started saying, you know what, we're not getting the Happy Meals anymore. You're paying for some junky toy. But back when we were kids, man, you got some really cool stuff, and I wish I would have hit this up when I was a kid, but I think it was 86 when they had the Happy Meal. Oh, and they were mini stompers too. They weren't like the full size ones.
Well, I think I've mentioned in my neighborhood before, but I grew up, the kids across the street, there were four boys, and my next door neighbor, there were three boys. So it was like any kind of boy toy or sports or anything like that. They were, you know, we would always, everybody would come out and play together. And so my next door neighbor had built in his backyard a stomper track, and they had used like a little hand shovel, you know, that you would use like for your garden or whatever. And, they had made this giant stomper track. And then of course the corners would just be, I mean, so it was kind of dug in so they wouldn't go out of the track, if that makes sense, you know? And then the corners were just kind of rounded. So you could put them in this track and they would just drive around in the dirt. And I didn't have a stomper. So I was like, I'm like the guy in the stands. You know, like I go over and I watch these trucks go around. I wanted one so bad. And so I talked my mom into, and my mom was, and still is, she was like the queen of garage sales and thrift stores. And, you know, like I was always getting weird stuff from garage sales that no other kid had or whatever, just kind of bizarre stuff, you know? And, so anyway, we had this store in our town that was, it was like the, it's like the outlet version of TGNY, like whatever got returned to TGNY or didn't sell or whatever would go to this store. I think it was called McCall's, I think. But, so I remember one time I was like, oh, I really want a stomper, you know? And so my mom took me to McCall's and I got a stomper. And, anyway, so I, you know, got home and we put batteries in it, and it was only front wheel drive. Like it was busted. So the rear wheels, it wasn't even four wheel drive. So I had like the world's only front wheel drive stomper, you know, and it would like get stuck and stuff. It was so sad, but, it would just peel out in the dirt. But I do remember them, and it's funny. You know, we were talking before the show, we were talking about, all of us have kids. And, you know, how they get addicted to, iPads you know, computer games and looking at the stuff that, my son builds in Minecraft. He's trying to show me this thing. He's like, I built this like a 14 layer trap. I'm like, I don't even understand what you're doing. Right. And then if you think about the simplicity of some of these toys, I mean, like the SSP thing, these are cars that you bash into each other and they fall apart, and then you put them together and you do it again. Or a stomper yeah. that has no steering mechanism, no anything. It's like, what does it do? You turn it on and it goes forward, and then eventually you turn it off or the battery runs out. I mean, that's the only outcome of this thing, you know? And I remember laying out in the dirt for hours, setting up, you know, little tracks and you know, of course on the commercial that was like 4x4, you know, you could try and stop them. I remember the little jingle.
Yep.
And it would be like, you know, you'd have these pencils that would look like logs, and it would just go and drive over these pencils, and you're like, oh, I want a stomper, and you know, and do all this stuff. And I don't know, it's just the simplicity of the toys back then that kept us entertained. It just seemed like it was, I don't know. I wonder like how long my kids would play with a stomper today.
Well, you know what part of that is that we didn't have an iPad to compete with that, right? I mean, we did a lot more outside kind of toys like that because that's what was around us. And I'm not saying that we necessarily wouldn't have played with things like this if we had more technology around us, but I don't know. Do you think it's because of that, or do you think it's because everything is so centric on iPads and apps and video games?
No, I think that's a good point, is that that's what we had, you know? And so, I mean, obviously, you know, but once you've been exposed to that stuff, I don't know. And now I will say this in my kid's defense. I just recently hooked our Atari 2600 back up to a spare television.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a arcade cabinet, a 60-in-1 multicade down in the kitchen. And so my son has been playing Donkey Kong for like the last 6 months, and he's pretty good at it, you know?
Nice.
So yeah, this has all started since I went to the, the Kong off that was in Denver last fall. And so I came back and I started working on my Donkey Kong game, and now he's working on his, and we've been, I'm ashamed to say that my 12-year-old, I mean, we're like neck and neck, you know. I did, hook up the Atari, and I was like, let me show you how terrible the Donkey Kong I had when I was a kid. And, you know, I mean, the Atari Donkey Kong is, it's not quite as bad as Pac-Man, but it's pretty bad. I mean, there's only two levels and, the flaming barrels just look like goldfish going back and forth.
Oh,
and
the Intellivision one isn't much better.
Yeah. So, and he played it. He sat there for probably half an hour, you know, and he was like, hey, you know, I wrapped it around and now I got this score and this score or whatever. So maybe I don't give him enough credit on some of that stuff, mm-hmm. but yeah, it just seems like, you know, once you've had a taste of, you know, I'm like I said in the car, you know, my kids, they need to have the internet access immediately so he can get online. And right now he's got like his laptop hooked up and on the TV. I think he's playing Minecraft and talking on FaceTime with his buddy, and they've got some plans or something. I don't know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it just seems like once you're at that level that some of these toys that we enjoyed as kids, I think it's past them, you know?
Well, I think I've still got a little bit of a chance with my 4.5-year-old son, because just getting back real quickly to that 255 computer command, my mom bought him this little toy, and I believe it's either a Corvette or a Viper, but it has like four little arrows on the roof, right? And you can make it go forward or honk a horn or something. It's very simplified, but he will play with that thing for hours, and he's not yet into games. I mean, he'll go into my arcade and he'll fiddle around and push some buttons, and he likes to play Turbo. Mm-hmm. I have a Turbo Cabaret.
Oh, wow. Nice.
He will steer. He gets the concept, but he gets more out of crashing and that noise that just continuously plays when you're crashing on Turbo.
Right.
But I don't know. I'm trying to expose him to more, I don't know, what would you call him? Like more hands-on kind of toys too. And he's really mm-hmm. into cars. He's got a whole bunch of other cars. Whereas my stepson never really cared about the car thing at all. So I don't know if it's what you expose them to or just what they see, but right now he's not really embracing the technology stuff much at all. And he's just into the other stuff.
You should just hide all the electronics from him.
That's kind of hard to do in my house.
I think it might have something to do, not just with what you expose them to, but even just television, because, you know, the Matchbox and the Hot Wheels commercials when we were kids, I mean, it's just, And commercials for like Stompers, like now it doesn't seem to be like that, you know? And mm-hmm. my son got all my Matchbox cars, and my wife has tried to get rid of them because my oldest boy has wanted nothing to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
He played with one car that was at my grandmother's when he would go visit. He'd play with it on the window. So that was the only Matchbox car he ever really cared about. My youngest sometimes will play, but not really that much. And they have a big bin of them. So, you know, they've been exposed to them. They just don't really want anything to do with it, you know. But, I mean, they play on their their devices and stuff. But they'll play Playmobil and Legos and stuff like that. So,
yeah,
it is good.
So, do you still have any Stompers?
No, I don't. I don't have any more Stompers.
You broke all the wheels off of them?
Yeah, right. I think they just
blew them up, set them on fire, and then turned them on.
I don't know what happened to the original Stompers that I had, but I'll tell you this, and then we'll move on to your next pick. But the Stomper Bully was an oversized Stomper. I mean, it was like 12 times the size of one. It was big. It had big, huge wheels. You would see like Bigfoot and Stomper Bully at the actual tractor shows when we were kids. They were getting big, like the truck rallies and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they had a Stomper Bully. But it was different because it had like a front axle was actually movable. So when it would go over stuff, it would look like it was, instead of bouncing over, kind of climbing it, you know, big puffy wheels on it. It had like a high, medium, the low, medium, high speed reverse. It had a winch on the front that actually worked. It was really cool until I took it apart.
Yeah,
I love that thing, and I actually ended
there
up.
There we go.
I ended up with two of them, and then the
were they each a half of the same one?
No, because I totally destroyed one.
Oh.
I had problems, man, but I ended up getting another one down the road, but it ended up just kind of, I think the batteries corroded it.
Now, this thing wasn't the, I'm probably getting my toys mixed up, but there was one that was like this, but it had like claws that came out of the tires.
Yeah, no, it wasn't that. I thought those were claws or something. Like they had a line of those, I believe.
I'm looking on eBay for Stomper Bully, and all I get is there's a 45 of Woolly Bully. So it's not exactly what I'm looking for.
There is, I will put link in our Skype. I actually, Paul, I put a link in Skype for the Smoking the Bandit one, but I'm going to put there's a link here now to the actual Stomper Bully. But
I'll tell you this, so far you are lucky and unlucky. If you want to recreate your youth and get some Stompers, there are a bunch of them on eBay. They're not cheap. I mean, I'm seeing $30, $40. And I don't know if some are more collectible than others, you know, I mean, different models, but man, I bet the cheapest one I see is about 20. I mean, of the original, you know, there are some of the, looks like some kind of newer ones or whatever, but, this could be an expensive. Now here's what you need. Here's the Stomper official carrying case. Yeah. Do you have that thing? No. It looks like a big giant wheel.
Nope, didn't have it.
Oh, this thing's pretty cool.
Didn't have it.
Yeah, it's funny. Like I said, I kind of missed the boat on this, but I was looking around at some of it today from your links and on YouTube, and I remember like the commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously I must have heard that while I was getting ready to play like Atari or something, but I do remember visiting relative. My parents were from Ohio originally, and I do remember going back there around that time in the summer. And I'm pretty sure my cousins had those because they were a couple of years younger than me. And I know there was something, like the more I hear you guys talk about it and you know, what I looked at today, I know that I've experienced them and probably played with them a little bit, but I never did have them.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome. But I don't think I'll be buying any more.
Oh, that's too bad.
And I don't want newer ones. I'd want older ones with spongy wheels. So. But anyways, that's one of my picks, Stompers.
This is Rick Reynolds of the Intellivisionaries, and when I want to hear great reviews of old movies I love from the 1970s and 80s, I listen to Throwback Reviews.
Rob, what else do you got? Cool.
Well, the next thing I had on my list was Capsella. And I don't know if you guys remember these or not. I think they were kind of marketed as like a almost like an edutainment kind of toy. I mean, it was a toy, but also kind of a learning thing.
And that's why I never heard of them.
Right. And they were non-flammable. So you wouldn't have had no interest for Sean.
They didn't have removable heads?
You couldn't burn them, nothing. What these things were... were a capsella, so it's like a capsule or whatever, and they were these little round kind of, they were made out of clear plastic, and they were, each one was about the size of a billiard ball, I guess. And then on each of the six sides, they had these little tiny, I think they were hexagons, it must have been, connectors or whatever. And so, well, they were all male, so you would get little female pieces and put it in between so you could add them together. So it was kind of like a building set, you know, where you would build, attach these things together. But, when you bought a set, and there were different numbers, so there was like, I know that I had the, early on, I got the Capsella 200, and then I got the Capsella 1000. And so that would denote, like, you know, obviously the bigger numbers would have more pieces and different parts and stuff in there. So, so each set came with a motor. So, and all the parts were inside these different little capsules. So some of the capsules were like, just an axle where it would have a gear on each end of it. And some of them, would, maybe be like a differential, you know, for a car, like where it would change the direction. And so you could hook all these things together and make toys that actually worked. You could make cars, you know, and so you would put the motor and hook all these things together and hook, you know, something to, it would come with wheels and you would hook the little drivetrain to the wheels and you can make a car. And there was also a capsule that held AA batteries. And then there was also a capsule that had like an on off kind of switch. Actually it went forward and reverse. So you'd hook this thing together and you could make, you know, a car. Or, I know one of the sets I had these little pontoons, you know, and so, and a little propeller. So you could make something that floated, in the bathtub or whatever and drive around like a boat or whatever. So you could put them together any way you wanted. However, if you've ever had a Lego set that didn't have very many pieces, you know, like I remember I had this one, set that I don't know, maybe had like 30 pieces and it was a little white race car. And on the back, it would show like different things you could build, and you could build anything you wanted as long as it kind of looked like a white race car. You know, I mean, there was only so many ways to put the same parts together. And so that was one of the limitations, I think, with Capsella is, I mean, you could build a long car, or you could build a short car, or a tall car, or, you know, a wide car, but they're all pretty much going to be a car, you know, or, you know, something that floated, on the water or whatever. Now, I guess this was a couple of years later. They had a spinoff toy, called Space Link. And so Space Link was made by the same people that made Capsella. And the molds were the same for these little capsule things, but they didn't have any motors and stuff in them. But instead what they were like parts that it came with parts that look like spaceships and stuff. So, and you could mix and match them. They would attach to Capsella. So at that point, you know, you could make like a, you know, a future kind of car for Capsella, but some in Space Link, you would have like a capsule that would open up and there were little people you could put in there and stuff. So they were
like an,
you know,
add-on set.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, some people, you could have it separate. You didn't have to mix and match them. But the Space Link stuff didn't have any electronics right. with them at all. It was just, I mean, you could build stuff or whatever, and it was just like Legos or something, you know.
And did you have those, too, or?
I did, yeah. And I think I got those later on, like maybe a year later or something like that.
But these things,
I do remember.
You could use them in water, too. Like you said, they're waterproof, like the little motors and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
That aspect of it rings a bell for me because I think a friend of mine might have had these.
Yeah. They had these, the water ones had these like big yellow pontoon kind of looking things. And so you would attach it to that. But yeah, you could put them in there. And, there was also, I know there was like a light bulb thing. There was one that had a light bulb, and so, and you'd run these wires around and stuff. So again, this is kind of like a nerdy kind of, you know, thing. You would build all these little contraptions and stuff. And, I remember a lot of times you'd want to use all the parts. So you would build stuff that didn't really make sense. Like I built this car and then on top of it, there's a propeller that spun for no reason just because I had a propeller left over, you know? or, you know, you'd have a boat that would go on the water and then you'd also have wheels on it. And you're like, well, I've got to use the wheels, you know? So, you built a lot of stuff that didn't necessarily make sense, but, yeah, they were fun. And I still have,
of course.
My dad has a shed in his backyard and I went over there one time and, all my Capsella stuff is in this thing, but I didn't like store it properly, you know, so I think it's got like rotten battery stuff in the compartment and I don't think the motors and stuff work anymore. So I don't know, if you can restore that stuff and get it to work or if it's just that, you know?
Yeah. You're probably screwed.
Yeah. How old were you when you got these?
Because
we got a picture. You sent me a picture, which is I think I'm going to use. I'll use that as the cover art for this episode.
You know, I want to say I was 13. That's a guess. 13 or maybe 14. I'm trying to place it because I can tell you in that picture. I don't know if you can tell, but I'm under a ping pong table. And my dad, that year for Christmas, Santa always brought us like one big present, you know, like if it was for the family or something like that. And that year we went out to the living room and there was a ping pong table. So I have so much respect now for my parents. You know, every Christmas when, you know, my wife and I mean, we sit around and you wait for the kids to go to sleep, and then you might, you know, have a knock back an eggnog or two, you know, mm-hmm. and then, you know, and now all of a sudden you're trying to remember where you put your drill, and it's 2 a.m. and, you know, you're trying to do this stuff. So I have no idea how my parents got a ping pong table set up and assembled in our living room.
That's huge. Literally the amount of work.
But, so the picture of me, I'm under the ping pong table, and I think there's some stuff, there may be some capsella. I think I remember there's a box in that picture. I'll have to look at it.
Yeah, again. There was one on, I think there's two boxes. There's one next to you, I think, and one on top of the ping pong table.
Yeah, I think like I got one, and then, my aunt and uncle got me a set also. So, and of course all of it, you know, it's like Legos and stuff, everything, you know, you could mix and match and put them all together. So the more you had, the better.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say I'm probably 13.
I was trying to study that picture, like see what other boxes. And then I emailed you. I saw those like leather slippers that you had, like the high top leather slippers. And I was like, I had those. They must have been from like Kmart or
classy.
Something.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I missed out on the leather slippers bit.
No, you didn't miss much. They sucked.
Yeah, I don't think I ever wore those.
I don't think I did either. They weren't very comfortable. They're like high tops.
Extra sweat.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were like with the fake rabbit skin on the inside. You know, so you like you put them on and instantly your feet are 200 degrees.
Yeah. Man. Well, that's a good one.
I'm looking on eBay here, and there are a couple of different, just like this one says, huge lot of motorized capsella. And there's just like just a million parts in here. There's wheels and pontoons and all this. And these are like, I don't know, $30, whatever. So it looks like you could get into this pretty cheap if you wanted to. I would just be wary of, like I said, I mean, there was a lot of stuff. You got motors and batteries and wires and stuff like that. And I'd be afraid of, you know, if all that stuff still worked.
I don't know. That name capsella just makes me think that there's going to be somebody reading a disclaimer about, you know, side effects of taking this drug.
Yeah, right.
Right. Do not use capsella for more than 4 hours.
All right, man. That was a good one. What do you got next, Paul?
Well, I'll be honest. I had a hard time narrowing down my choices for this episode. I could talk about tons of toys from back then. But I decided to go with the Green Machine from Marx.
This is the Green Machine. 10 years old enough for Green Machine, a racer for guys who like a ride that's really fast. Six shift controls, swivel action rear wheels, twist, turn, and spin like wild.
Green Machine.
What a ride!
Yeah!
Green Machine with stick shift steering, some assembly required. Green Machine by Marx.
Now,
yes.
I had a big wheel as a kid, a younger kid, and I have pictures of Christmas morning. You see it in the background. And I, by the way, a side note on the big wheel, I'd like to think that I helped invent that brake that they eventually put on the right rear wheel, because I used to take a big stick and I would put it back there and I would pull on that thing.
And wedge it.
Yeah. And that would stop my big wheel. And I went up and down the street, and I always thought, well, guy who worked for that company must have gone up the street and saw me doing that. And, hey, guys, I got a great idea for the next big wheel. But the Green Machine, it's kind of like the reverse of the big wheel. I mean, it's three wheels, but you're steering in the back wheels instead of the front. You know, the front is just stationary going straight, and you have these two levers that kind of look like gear shifts. You know, you move one up and one back. They're tied together, so they move together. But that thing will just do all sorts of quick little turns. You can do spin outs in it. And it came out in 78. So I would have been about 11, 12 years old or so when I got it. So my buddy got one for Christmas, but he got what I believe was the knockoff. I don't know who made it. It was called the Blue Max. And I know the Green Machine came out first, and this was a, you know, also ran. It wasn't quite, didn't quite steer as well. It didn't quite turn as sharp. And, we spent probably the entire Christmas break just going up and down and, you know, all over the neighborhood, just wreaking havoc, scaring cats and squirrels and things. But what I do remember, the way that I got mine, I bought it. See, what I used to do as a kid, my parents, mostly my mom, would set us up at the local bank with what, you know, they called it a Christmas club, right? You're supposed to contribute money throughout the years to teach you responsibility or what have you. And at the end of the year, you've got money to buy Christmas presents, right? Well, I would use about maybe 20% of that money to buy Christmas presents for others. And the rest of it, I'd buy myself something on, you know, Christmas Eve or before. So I picked this thing up a few days before Christmas. So I had it a couple days before my buddy even, you know, we didn't even know my friend was going to get this thing. You know, he rolls out Christmas morning in his Blue Max. I'm like, oh, hell no. You got to go against the Green Machine, buddy. The Green Machine had like a It was like a black plastic seat, but it was like really nicely contoured. And his was just sort of part of the mold of the main body of the thing. So yeah, it was second class all the way, but yeah, that thing was great. I don't know whatever happened to it. I'm sure eventually, as with big wheels, like the front wheel started getting holes in it and, you know, the whole thing would fall apart. But, yeah, I love that thing. And I know they still make it now. They make like a revised version that's probably a little sturdier, yeah. But, I will get one of those for my son when he gets a little bit older, whether he wants it or not.
And what year did you say that was?
I think they first came out around 78. It okay. might have been 77. Because I think, like I said, I think it, I know it was a Christmas thing, and I know I got mine right before Christmas. So
okay. Yeah, I think I'm maybe 77, because I just sent you guys a picture. Now, I did not have the Green Machine. But mine wasn't the crappy Blue Max. Mine was the Batmobile. And it was a Green Machine. It was by Huffy, just like the Green Machine, but instead of the green color scheme or whatever, it's the Batmobile. So it was blue and yellow, and it had, you know, Batman stickers on it or whatever. And this picture, we moved to the house that I basically grew up in the summer of 78. And so this would have been, it would have to be the Christmas of 77. And we're wearing like winter coats. So it would have been, you know, either December 77 or maybe January, February 78 or whatever. So, so yeah, I mean, it's right in that ballpark, but, I don't know. The Batman one is pretty cool. Well, I just got to say.
Yeah, your picture didn't come through for me yet. But if you had the Batman one, and you said it was from Huffy, right? Because when the Green,
I think
when
so,
the Green
yeah.
Machine came out, it was from a company called Marx, M-A-R-X. You know, when they yeah. disappeared. So I think the re-release was Huffy. So maybe yours was a few years later.
Well, let me go look here. I'll have to find.
Or maybe.
Yeah, I was trying to do a little checking up on the Green Machine just to find out when it did come out and stuff like that, and it was kind of hard to find exact information.
Yeah, I ran
about
into
it.
Wow! If you go to Google and type in Batman Green Machine, two of the five pictures that show up are me.
Are you serious?
How weird is that?
Nice. I gotta do that.
I didn't have one. Nobody on my block had one, and we had a lot of kids, but we all knew of the Green Machine. We all wanted one, but I had a big wheel, and I didn't have the original. I think the original big wheel was like, yellow and blue maybe or something like that. But I had one, my big wheel was just a normal two wheels and two small wheels in the back and the big one in the front, and it was, it was like a Cobra. It was like a black big wheel with like Cobra stickers on it. Oh. And I've tried to search that thing on Google and I can't find anything on it. But I love that thing. I mean, it was like a bunch of us on the blockhead. We were like a gang. We all had our big wheels. It was,
nice.
I mean, you couldn't see that Green Machine commercial as a kid and not want one. Green Machine. I mean, it was.
Oh, yeah. And you could spin that thing like crazy. Yeah. You know, I mean, you just go hauling and then you just. you know, crank those handles one way or the other. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. You said you were about 12 or 13 when you got it,
Paul? No, I was like 11 or 12 when I got that one.
Okay. Well, even still, I think 12, you could justify it with a green machine.
Yeah.
Because I think now I'm thinking, I don't know if I could picture my 12-year-old on a normal big wheel and not look kind of odd.
My stepson is 12, and I don't know. He could probably get away with a green machine. I must have been 11, you know? But, yeah, I don't recall having it very long because I remember getting it. I remember doing it, you know, driving it early on, and then I don't know what happened to it. So we probably outgrew it quickly, or we just ran them into the ground. They weren't very tough, you know?
Yeah, all those big wheels, man, you would burn those tires out, tires.
On my big wheel, what I did when the front tire started going is I used to fill the thing with sand, and then I would drive down the sidewalk in the sand. Of course, it's flying at me, too, but it's flying out everywhere else. Yeah, chase my friend's little sister.
So have you seen this guy? I know I saw this on one of those biker build shows or whatever, and I'm looking on online here, and I see it here, too, but there's this guy that built... a green machine, but it's got like a Chevy, it's like a motorcycle, you know, I mean, it's like an adult size thing here.
I saw that picture too.
Yeah. The rear tires are like from a car, and then it's got this giant wheel in the front or whatever. That just looks like a lot of fun and bad news at the same time. You know what I mean? Cause there is nothing good going to come from that. I mean, when you're in the hospital, and you're like, I put a giant engine. I built a big green machine. You know, I mean, it's not going to end well.
Yeah, I think you might get a high five from the doctor briefly on your what you created. But then he hands you the bill with a smile.
You're an idiot. This thing is awesome, though. And I, you know what? I'm with you. I always liked the green machine over the big wheel. I mean, the big wheel to me was like a tricycle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, it was a little bit bigger and it had a seat or whatever, but you know, that was a tricycle, but the green machine was a badass lever throwing, peeling out thing, you know? So
that's how you could get away with it when you were a little bit older on that thing. Cause I think it's just badass and cool.
Yeah. So I was definitely a green machine or Batman machine. Just saying, if you had the cool Batman version.
There's a picture of a guy our age riding one of the remake green machines. It's not pretty.
No, it's not. I've seen it.
Did you ever have, I know Sean and I, we talked a lot about skateboards, but, where you had like the little skid plate and I think they did this more in the movies, but where you could like skid or whatever and leave sparks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with the little flints.
Right. That's all I can see me. Like, if I'm on a big wheel now, it's just going to be dragging the ground and sparks going everywhere. And
back wheels fall off.
Yeah, it's all like bowed in the back, you know. I'm like, why isn't this going? And the wheel's just like flat. They should make adult ones of these. I mean, not like a giant engine on it, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I live pretty close to a lake and I always see guys like on those, what do they call it? Like a recumbent bikes, yeah. You know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to do that, but, I mean, you know, I told Sean last week we started going to the Y and we're like on treadmills and stuff and I'm looking for different things. I would ride a big wheel, man. Like, I would go around my neighborhood on a big wheel and that's exercise. I'd do that. And then when I come back when I get to the driveway, I'll be like, just throw those cranks around and slide in.
Little plastic skid down there.
You know what I just remember about those big wheel and green machine is just the sound of those like hard plastic wheels rolling over the sidewalk when there's sand or something. And it's like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
that clickety.
Love it.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, nothing like that.
I guess I'll end us off with, Evel Knievel stunt cycle.
What a jump! Evel's riding the amazing stunt cycle. That gyro power sends him over 100 feet at top speed. Lifty loop, and he's not through yet. Into the dragster. Evel's super sprint car with built-in drag chute to slow him down. What a hook! And now, the sky cycle. That daredevil death-defying supersonic sky plane on wheels. And here he is on the super cool chopper bike with the power that can really rip. He's sensational. He's Evel Knievel. He's a knockout. He's ideal.
Do you guys have one of those?
Ooh, yeah, that's a good one.
I didn't own one, but I had many friends who did, and I wanted one.
Yeah, my brother and I both had one. And now those, when I looked at, there's a website, and I'll put the link for that, where it gives every time, every version that they put out. And I had either the 4 or 5, the 4th or 5th issue that came out. I'm not really sure. They all kept looking familiar, but, they came out in 73. So, I'm pretty sure it wasn't the original set that came out, but, they were really cool. They had the heavy, I think you were talking about it, earlier, Paul, with, the SSP, mm-hmm. like the original with the heavy rubber yeah. wheel. That's what this had, like a real heavy, rubber wheel in the back, a thinner one in the front. And it had like this little, like red ramp or blue. I think we had a red one and a blue one where you'd kind of lock the back of the bike in there and you had like a posable Evel Knievel that would sit on the bike. You had a helmet that would come on and off and, you would crank this thing, crank it. And then it would take off with the same sound as with that mm-hmm. ripcord, mm-hmm. but it was all done with this crank on the side of this little gear ramp thing that he would back up on and just take off. And, I mean, those things would fly. We would build ramps, jumping them all over. And I've seen YouTube videos where people have made like these really crazy ramps with them and like trying to basically like recreate a real Evel Knievel in their backyard, to see how far they can jump and everything. There's some pretty cool videos on YouTube, but, the back wheel is pretty dangerous. I mean,
yeah. In a number of ways.
When you started talking about this, that was my first memory is, and I don't know what compelled us as kids to do stupid stuff like this, but I remember cranking it and you know, it would start real low. Woo.
Yeah.
Woo. And then you're cranking it more. Woo. Woo. And then you get it. I mean, it's like, woo. You know, it's going, and then you're like, I wonder what would happen if I stick the webbing of my hand in that.
Yeah, you know, or put it on the top of your head and your hair.
And now you're like, why, you know, when my kid first started crawling, we're like, oh, okay, he's going to start crawling. And the first thing he did was go right to an electrical socket. I'm like, what are you doing? You know, but it's like, there's something in us as people where we're like, what is the dumbest thing I can do with this right now? You know, mm-hmm. and that's what I remember with that Evel Knievel thing. I mean, you just crank it up and you're like, huh, I wonder if this will leave a burn mark on my lip, you know, or, and then you just mm-hmm. stick it on your face and you're like, oh God, that hurt. Why did I do that? You know, and then you have to.
I can almost remember putting it like on my arm to see it, you know, yeah. like if you get like a brush like, burn.
Yeah,
you know,
when they call
it
like an eraser burn or whatever, that sort yeah. of thing, you know, and you know, those, SSP toys that, Paul was talking about, those things were made to just run continually into things over and over. This thing, I don't think it was.
Yeah,
it was as much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I remember.
But it was cool because he would fall off or
oh,
stuff
yeah.
Like
it
that.
Was kind of like the stick man of that time. You know what I mean? There was a.
And it was heavy, too. It had like a lot of like weight
mm-hmm,
to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those bikes. But they did. I mean, they had, I think, 5 or 6 different releases of that. And they did re-release it again a few years back, but they don't look anything like these did. I mean, these are really, I mean, let's face it. It was like a boy's, you know, Barbie in a sense, because that's about how big he was.
Right.
You know, but it was cool. You could play with him because it was Evel Knievel. Everyone knew Evel Knievel now, was. You could throw him on there.
Sure. And, now, did these, the different releases, was there anything different about them? I mean, did they do different things or it was just, they just kept making it? And
I think it was just the look of them.
Okay.
I think they all pretty much were the same. Like the original had, like a, chrome-ish looking handlebars, but I know that they had said that it became a little too pricey, I guess, to keep recreating that. So then they went to different handlebars. Some had a crossbar on it. And then sometimes they took it off, just different versions, different stickers, I think, stuff like that. The tailpipes, some came with like a chrome and then a black, on the end of them. Then they went just solid black exhaust and just different ways they looked. I'm pretty sure is what the yeah. difference was.
I don't remember the ones that we had. I don't remember the details if it was black or chrome or whatever. I do remember the little crank ring. ramp thing was blue on the one that we had, but I don't know if that's...
I seem to remember like a blue, or maybe it was a red blue one, but yeah, I can't remember the specific details, but I do remember the sound and the way it went, and I remember the commercial.
Mm-hmm.
In the re-engineered one, Sean, did they put some safety features in to prevent, you know, pulling hair out and stuff? And you know, when you did that, the next thing you said was, oh man, that hurt. Hey, dude, come over here and try that.
Yeah, right. Check this out.
Yeah, you're like, dude, this will be funny. Yeah. Try this.
Inevitably, your friend would do it, and then he'd call somebody else over to do it.
I can see that the re-releases, they had more of a knobby wheel on it, like a dirt bike.
Oh, yeah.
That's the other thing. These wheels were like completely smooth wheels, mm-hmm. but really heavy back wheels to this thing. And it had little post that was what would lock it into the
crank. And it would kind of hold it. So you cranked it and then... Did you just push him to release it when you were done, or how did it launch?
I think it had
launch?
A push button, didn't it, or a lever or something?
I thought it was after it just kind of, you cranked it so much and just kind of took off after a bit or something.
Well, Sean, I can put you the first edition one is 73, and it looks like it has the blue crank. And that one loose right now is a 225.
Jeez.
That's crazy, dude. Wow. I think you can like get one of Evel Knievel's bones for.
just go ahead and get it, and we'll bill it to the. We'll put it on the network.
Yeah, is there a charge account?
Make sure you buy it through Amazon with a special link.
Oh, that's true, right?
Throwbackreviews.com/Amazon.
There are some cheaper ones on here, and it looks like here's the little crank. Like, here's a blue one, here's a yellow one, here's a red one. All right, here's the Sean version. It's got, here's a motorcycle, it says it's got one handlebar. And here's Evel Knievel. Well, he's got his head. I don't know.
My mother's selling all of her old toys on eBay for parts.
You could probably put one together here with this. I don't know. Yeah, there's some different ones on here, but, yeah, this looks like it's gone past, toy prices, and a lot of these look like collectibles now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think everybody knew somebody that had one. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it was everywhere.
They were all over the place. I think I didn't get one because I had the SSP stuff. I think mom would only allow so many loud toys that destroyed things.
That would smash into stuff.
But I remember it would, if you ran it on like bumpy ground, it would kind of like right itself, right? Because it had that centrifugal force going, and it would just like bounce, and he's still going. Of course, he might fall off, but you could pose him, right, in different ways. Like he'd hold onto the handlebars, and he could be like doing a handstand and stuff.
Yeah, you could take him off. Yeah, yeah, it was really actually a really cool tool. I wish she had that.
Yeah, this is something I can see. I actually could see my kids doing, you know, because I mean, it has the violent factor. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's not like, you know, a stomper where you get when they're going to go, well, what's it do now? Well, it goes straight forever, you know, but this thing is like.
Well, because you're not going to jump with a stomper either.
Right.
You know, like this, you could set up little obstacles, jumps, because this thing really took off, and it was because it was so heavy and durable, it really would just go.
Anything you
could make jumps and even land them at times.
Right. Anything you do with this is going to. In spectacularly.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Not be disappointed.
Like, not sure how, but.
I remember making little ramps out of hardback books. You know, you just open a book and maybe prop something under there, and then boom, you got your instant thing, you know, and then just crank up all Evel and let him fly.
Didn't care.
Yeah, we used to do that all the time, too.
Yep. Make him jump the shark. Because that was Fonzie, but. I wonder if they had a Fonzie version of this.
I hope not.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's probably a custom one somewhere. You could probably find a custom painted one on eBay.
Fonzie's head.
Headless Luke version.
Yeah. Yeah, I had that one.
Yeah, man. This, I wish these weren't so expensive because I would totally buy one of these
Oh, I'm sure you'll find one at a thrift store and you'll post and brag about it to me.
Yeah, this is dangerous to do these episodes.
They're expensive is what it is. It cost me a fortune. I just put a bid on a 77 Trans Am.
So that's going to pretty much wrap up just for timing reasons. But hey, just lets us do another episode down the road here. We can do a toy episode number 3.
Oh, absolutely.
These were definitely good picks, man. And it was kind of funny how it worked out. We all brought a bunch of vehicle ones.
Yeah.
All different kinds, all different stuff. But, and sorry we didn't get to our last picks, but like I said, we're definitely going to revisit this topic again down the road. But it was fun. And like you said, Paul, it's hard to, you know, you're like, oh, all right, 3. I can pick 3. And then you're like, well, no, I want this one. Well, I want that one. I want to talk about this one first. It's kind of hard because much.
I've got some to talk about that I only remember seeing in like the wish book, you know, around Christmas. And I don't know what they were called. I don't know how to search for them. I'm just like, God, I want to know what that toy was. I wanted it so badly.
Yeah. And in just looking, I was finding different things, like maybe that something that Rob had brought that they actually bought the rights to something else. And I'm like, wow, it was leading me to all different things. And even my third choice that I'll save for another time, I just kind of stumbled upon. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I forgot about that. I loved it so much. I totally forgot. So, yeah, there's just so much stuff out there. So we'll definitely have to do this one again.
Paul, if you get some free time, go out to wishbookweb.com. And yeah. I don't know if you've ever browsed through theirs.
I have actually looked through some of that. And the one, I'll just really quickly, the one particular thing I was looking for, okay, this is all I remember. It was a blue plastic track, like a figure eight, and there was a red and a black car. And I think the black car was a police car. And both cars were like a Datsun 510, like that sort of boxy early Datsun. Mm-hmm. And they would just go around, and I don't know if they, like, went at a siren or they chased each other, but, you know, as, like, a 7-year-old or 8-year-old, I really wanted that, and I asked for it for Christmas, like, 2 or 3 years in a row, and I never got it. And, it's not even, like, a slot car. They were, like, battery-powered or something, but I've looked through the wish books and stuff I've never seen. I just wanted to know what it was called.
Do they, you know? But, well, I guess you would know if you saw a picture if it was the point, like, they eventually crashed into each other, or?
I don't think they did. I think it was just, like, a little playset. You turned them on, and they drove around in a figure eight. Right. I mean, it's really lame, but.
Again, how easily we were entertained, back then.
Yeah, but I've looked on that wish book web, and I haven't seen it yet, because it could have been. Because, you know, Sears had that, and then JCPenney had the wish book kind of thing too. So I don't know which one it was in, but it's got to be in one of those somewhere. I'll find it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely if you have a lot of time to blow looking on that site.
Yeah.
There's some toy forums out there, and I've gone out there before and posted, and you sound like an idiot, you know, like, I was looking for this. I had a cup when I was a kid that looked like an ice cream cone. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm looking for this thing. It was like an ice cream cone. And I'm like trying to describe it. And somebody eventually, because they'll post something. And then you're like, no, it wasn't like a whippy cone. It was like a, you know, and you like keep narrowing it down.
Yeah.
And eventually somebody found it. I was like, oh, but unfortunately they just found a picture of it. So I still don't know. The search continues for that.
Yeah.
But,
I've got a list of those kind of things.
I know. Yeah. You could just go forever.
Try using Google goggles or something with it. The picture. See if it can figure it out.
Yeah.
It's worth a shot.
Yeah.
Anyways, Paul, thanks for coming on, man. It was a good time.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome.
It was something we talked about for quite some time, so I'm glad we actually got to
Yeah, I'm happy to be on. I mean, I've, you know, got all kinds of things to say about toys and movies as well. If you guys hit up a movie that I've seen enough and been into, I'd, you know, be interested in doing that too sometime in the future.
Well, yeah, if you got some favorites, you know, kick some suggestions our way.
Yeah,
and we'll
see
what we can do.
Well, you've done several of them too. So. Yeah, I really enjoy those episodes. And like the last one that you did, just one of the boys.
That was a fun episode, and I know that was one of Sean Robert's. He liked that movie, you know, and that was one of the things where it kind of worked out, where he was a fan of the movie, and Sean's a cool dude to have on too, so.
Yeah, I was a fan of the movie and totally forgot about the movie until I saw that and listened to that episode. I'm like, oh, man, I got to watch that again. It's great to show those kind of things to, like, my 12-year-old stepson, right? All these old classics.
Yeah.
Well, there's two things you could show him in that movie.
He'll like that part.
You'd be the best stepdad ever.
Exactly. My dad.
Well, Paul, why don't you give out some plugs, all the places people can find you, maybe your music or anything like that?
Yeah, sure. Obviously, the Intellivisionaries, intellivisionaries.com or INT podcast or intvpodcast.com or intellivisionpodcast.com. Yes, there's a long list.
And you have a Twitter account,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you can. I don't do, mostly Rick does the Intellivisionaries Twitter account. That's at INT podcast. And we're on Facebook, INT podcast. Also, you can catch some of my music. I've got a site that's called notatari.com. And originally that was set up as a joke when the stories were going around how Atari was suing people that were using the name Atari in domain name. So I bought Not Atari.
Ah, okay.
Put up that this is Not Atari and I own it. But so far they haven't come after me. But I use that site to do some music stuff for some other podcasts. And there's some links to some of my stuff on there as well. So
cool.
Real cool music too.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I do a lot of the Intellivisionary stuff has my own original music because that's one of the things I used to pursue as a career. It's now it's more of a hobby, but the electronic music stuff.
Well, again, thank you. It was a good time.
Yeah, definitely want to do it again.
Yeah, I see a number three in our future.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Rob? Any last words?
I don't think so. I think right now in my shopping cart right now, I'm at $322. So we got to wait for my PayPal balance before we do number three.
Oh, man. Yeah. So in our next episode, we'll be recording The Incredible Shrinking Woman. And we're going to have Vic Sage back with us. And I think he's got a good story for us that he's going to tell us. So
nice.
That should be a fun episode. I haven't seen that movie since I was a kid. I remember watching it with my mother on HBO. So I'm planning on watching that with the kids this weekend, hopefully, in preparation for that show. So, but yes, this was a good episode. I look forward to number three that we're going to do down the road. And until next time, thanks for listening. If you'd like to contact the show, you can send an email to feedback@throwbackreviews.com or call 716-243-2709 and leave a voicemail. You can also find us on Facebook, we're Throwback Reviews Podcast, or on Twitter at Throwback Review. Don't forget to head over to the Throwback Network, where you can find more great retro-themed podcasts. Go to throwbacknetwork.net.